Hi everyone, my name is Patrick Akio, and if you're interested in open source communities, meetups, DevRel, and more, this episode is for you. Joining me today is Alessandro Vozza. He's DevRel at Solid.io and organizer and founder of the Kubernetes Community Days in Amsterdam. And we had a blast of a conversation. I'll put all his socials in the description below. Check him out. And with that being said, enjoy the episode. Beyond coding. Good stuff. So you went on vacation in Italy?
Puglia.
Me too. I just came back last week.
No way.
Yeah, yeah.
Wait, I was in... I'm from there.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, one of my best friends got married in Amsterdam last year, and me and my friends, every year we go to a villa.
Okay.
We are like 20, 25, more. And we stay in this villa, we play music, we're all DJs, right?
Really?
and so this year we decided to do the villa with a wedding.
Okay.
So he got married in this beautiful masseria in Puglia, and we were like 40 people.
Oh wow.
Yes.
So, awesome.
And I drove all the way there.
Yeah, really? From here?
From here.
It's like a 2-day drive, no?
3 days drive to go, 2 days to come back. But it's beautiful. You go through the best part of Europe, right?
I can imagine.
Germany, Austria, north of Italy. We stop, we have fun.
Awesome.
It was quite hot.
Did you drive with the group as well? They all drove?
I drove with my two best friends.
Yeah.
And to come back, I drove with my wife.
Yeah.
So, best.
That's awesome.
Travel companions ever. So,
that's awesome. Yeah. I just came back last Saturday, actually.
Okay. We're in Puglia?
I'm not sure where we stayed. I mean, I visited Ostuni.
Ostuni
is beautiful.
Yeah. Lecce?
Lecce, I'm not quite sure.
But
I'll show you some pictures after, because I usually take a lot of pictures and then I see on the map where I was.
It's so cool because I'm from Puglia. Of course, like everybody denigrates his own place, right? So I don't think Puglia is that cool. But then people told me, this is the paradise on earth. It's like,
it was amazing.
It's pretty nice.
Apparently, so we did a pasta making class. And apparently I have a natural talent for making orecchiette.
Orecchiette. So many memories of my mother making orecchiette with you take a fork.
Yeah, yeah. With a knife,
you make a look at it. It's so beautiful. I grew up there.
I can imagine.
I'm from Taranto. It's the south coast.
Yeah.
Which is the best part, of course.
Yeah, of course.
It's the Mediterranean part. Then there's the Adriatic part.
Yeah.
But I'm from the Mediterranean. So from Taranto, on a clear day, you can see the coast of Tunisia.
Yeah, really?
Yes.
It's insane.
It's insane. Yeah, it's such a beautiful place. But then, of course, like I grew up there. And I think like it's not cool, but my friends all love it. We had so good time. Yeah,
it was a lot of fun. We did the pasta making class was a lot of fun. We did wine tasting as well.
Mm-hmm.
That was a lot of fun, and otherwise just a lot of beaches and a lot of good food.
Yeah,
and what more do you want from a vacation?
Yes.
Yeah,
these infinite fields of olive trees.
Yeah,
right? So that's the typical landscape of Puglia, right? So
I saw that. Yeah,
and Ostuni, Alberto Bello.
Yeah,
scene.
We've talked about it because the pasta making. The person that facilitated that talked a lot about Alberto Bello and the Trullis. She had one because we were in one making pasta.
Okay.
And then she said, if you really want to see all the Trullis, go to Alberto Bello.
Yes.
Yeah.
So it's a place where Greek culture and East culture combines. In Bari, the capital, there are some churches with minarets.
Mm.
So the churches are from the Asian culture.
Yeah.
So it's Puglia is a place of a lot of mixes, right?
Yeah.
So there's a Spanish influence, the Romans, the Greeks, all together in Puglia. So,
I saw a lot of like Greek similarities now that you say it.
Taranto takes his name from Taras, the son of Poseidon.
Yeah.
We were one of the most important Greek ports. And the culture is from there, you know. It's we are all Mediterranean. It was it's a great, very rich history, and I'm proud to be from there. I mean, I'm actually from all the places. It's a good place to be from.
That is such a coincidence. Yeah. You were there 2 weeks ago then, or one week ago as well.
We left the 1st of July.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. I left maybe the day before you. Good stuff, man. I was thinking about driving, and then I was like, oh, it's 2 days. That's a lot.
It's a lot, but it's you really go through Europe. And yeah, it's beautiful. Amazing. You see the changes, right? You go through Germany, and then all of a sudden there are mountains, and it's Austria, yeah. And then it's Tirol, and Südtirol. And we stop in Bolzano, in Bozen.
Yeah.
Amazing place. And then we continue to Bologna. And you can see the whole landscape. It's gradually changing towards the beach and the flat of Puglia.
Yeah.
So it's really cool.
I'm going to pitch it next time to my Google friends. Maybe I should open
a tourist attraction in Puglia.
Maybe. But you were born and raised there. And how did you end up in Amsterdam?
Of course. The best reason is for love. So, of course, I met my ex-wife now in Ferrara, in the north of Italy.
Yeah.
At the time, I was studying chemistry. Mm. I'm a chemist by education. So I met my ex-wife. She used to live in Utrecht.
Yeah.
And I really wanted to be a professor at the time. I wanted to continue the academic career.
Yeah.
So I found a PhD at the University of Amsterdam. So we moved to Amsterdam to get my PhD in chemistry.
Yeah.
And there to work in restoration. She's an architect, restoring old houses on the canals. It was a very, very cool job. And so I moved to get my PhD in chemistry and to stay with my ex-wife now. So and then I really fell in love, and I've been here since, and I changed my career. So when I finished my PhD in chemistry, I moved to IT.
Yeah.
And never looked back.
Why did you make the move then? And that was when you were already here.
Yeah, but I've been around. I'm 47, by the way. Mm. So when I was 8, my brother was 12.
Yeah.
We got a Commodore 64.
Okay.
And that changed our life, right? It's like one of these moments.
I've heard that so many times. It's like Commodore 64. That was the
one of those generations. I don't know if we have a name, but the Commodore 64, Amiga.
Yeah.
My brother was very much involved in the demo scene.
Mm.
It was the best time to be. You know, it was so full of possibilities, right?
Yeah. Possibilities.
Yes, because everything was new. People were, you know, like creating these amazing demos and hacking around. And there was like the modem, right? So there was no internet, there was nothing. So we saw it appearing on the scene. So my brother was involved in the BBS scene. I don't know if you know what it is.
No clue.
A BBS.
What is that?
A bulletin board system.
Okay.
So before...
Is that the thing with the pins?
No. So before the internet,
there
was the BBS. So it was a server, a system, a computer connected to a dial-up line, like just a phone. So you were supposed to... You called this computer, you download the latest message in the forum. It's like a forum, right? So you could do also games and interact with other users.
Yeah.
You were downloading the latest updates, uploading your own, like your replies, and that's it.
Okay.
And then another person would do the same.
Yeah.
And so on and so forth until you establish like a community around this BBS.
Okay.
And it was the beginning of what is today the open source. So people were exchanging, of course, also cracked software,
illegal
software, but also just talking.
Mm-hmm.
And it was amazing. So there were BBS in my own town about peace. It was 1990.
Okay.
So there was the war. There were wars in the Persian Gulf. It was an interesting time for politics. So people were talking about how to promote some political ideas like peace, right? So and they were all happening around this BBS.
Okay.
And it was an amazing time. So
awesome.
And then I saw it, you know, then we saw the internet coming up, the www, the web. It's, I was there.
Mm-hmm.
So it's something that I have little kids, of course.
Yeah.
And they don't know this. Right? They just have this ready-made internet, interconnected network of computers.
Yeah.
But there was a time when you had to call in, upload your stuff, wait for the stuff to download. It was an interesting time.
So, I can imagine. Yeah. And you took that, I mean, that was kind of your childhood and growing up. You kind of experienced that growing up in a way.
Yeah.
And then is that also what inspired you to make kind of that switch from chemistry
Yeah.
And education.
So my origin story, I have a story, so if you have a minute, which is quite, I mean, interesting. So chemistry. So yeah. I moved to the north of Italy to study.
Yeah.
To university, right? So now in chemistry, you have to learn one programming language, which is Fortran.
Okay.
For some reason. Fortran is very good for mathematical computation. It's part of the curriculum.
Yeah.
So it was my first year and there was a room full of computers and my professor was supposed to teach Fortran, but they were all broken and they didn't work and they were running Windows 3.11. So it was a mess. So my professor was very, she was very frustrated. So one day I decided,
nobody told you.
To fix everything. So I took a computer, the most powerful. I put some extra RAM in it. I took, cannibalized other computers. I connected to the university network.
Yeah.
I downloaded Linux, Slackware 0.9, 24 floppy disks, and start to. So I created a server and I made the other computers like client to this server. So I share folders, NFS, all sorts of stuff. So my professor was delighted she could finally teach Fortran. So everybody was happy. And then 2 or 3 days later, the people from the network, the sysadmin of the University of Ferrara, they came down.
They were like, whoa.
And they say, who are you? What are you doing? Because I figure out all the network IPs, the CIDRs and stuff. And then they, instead of kicking me out and expelling me from the university, they made me sysadmin of the chemistry department.
Good stuff.
So I started there. That's where I started my open source interest. I was part of the Linux user group.
Yeah.
Of Ferrara, of my every major city had a Linux user group. We were helping people switching from Windows to Linux.
Yeah.
So we own one of the few DVD-ROM in town, so we were asking people to come and we would help them installing open source software.
Yeah.
We also petitioned the city council to move to open source, because why would you use closed technologies for public service? There's no reason, right? So everything should be open. And that was early 2000.
Mm.
Fast forward 16 years later, I joined Microsoft, of course. Not because I changed. I've always been around open source. I will always be around open source. I think it's the best way to develop software. Mm. It's probably also a very good business model. Now there's a whole debate about RHEL and SUSE and so on, and William Rizzo, my friend, so has opinion on it. But is also a very viable commercial model.
Yeah.
So open source is my main thing. And so 16 years later, I joined Microsoft, not because I changed, because they changed.
Yeah, right?
They came around to see the light and to recognize the driving force of open source. And that is a very good influence on the world. Like, I think it's a better world because people come together to build software and then give it back to the communities like this. So
I agree.
It's all point.
I touched on that with William as well. I love open source. I love where it's going. But there's also some concerns with kind of the maintenance of open source or kind of the availability. Like it's a great thing. But the people that become responsible of kind of maintaining that, sometimes that can be a bottleneck as well. And there's nothing that facilitates it and makes it sustainable for people to do so. Because all of a sudden, it could be like a second job to some people, but it doesn't have any income or any incentive other than giving back knowledge-wise and software-wise.
No, but I think it should be treated as human heritage, right? So this is part of our heritage as a species in a way, right? So this software is what makes us work and produce and
it's everywhere.
Make the society tick, right?
Yeah.
So it needs to be protected, like Colosseum or something that belongs to everybody and should be protected. So the governments and society at large should step in and do something about it.
Yeah. You think that's where it's going as well?
Yes. So disclaimer, I'm a long-time communist.
Yeah.
So what stands in the way of many other things, not just open source, but also in the way of survival of the planet itself, is capitalism, is profit-driven interest, right?
Yeah.
So if everything is profit, then of course there's there's less space for these things like open source. So I think the trend is to overcome the limitation of capitalism, of pure profit,
yeah,
and go towards a world where people collaborate more. And I don't think I'm going to see it, but maybe my grandchildren will see this world where people collaborate, people help each other without the profit like as a first thing. Yeah, so yeah. That's I'm an optimist and idealist. Just still, at 47 is pretty good, right?
So yeah, I agree. I mean, I like that, right? Because I had to do a lot of psychological assessments because I'm part of a group that's now team leads within Xebia. And out of there, the assessment said I'm a team player. Like that was one of the biggest factors there is I've always been a team player. So I like co-creation, I like working together, I like consensus even, which is kind of be a challenge being team lead sometimes as well. But working together has always been a big component in software engineering. I didn't know that at first, but it is what I've experienced, right? Working together in a project. If you don't know, dare to ask a question and figuring it out together, right? Building up that confidence as a team to be able to kind of solve any problem in a way as well. And that's also kind of factoring in open source, where people come together. Sometimes some person kind of fire starts it or kickstarts it. Other people come in and collaborate and co-create with that. And then that artifact is probably going to be there for a really long time, right? And I think we're kind of still, I don't know if it's the forefront, but it still feels like the forefront because we're creating things and the people that have created it are still there. But at some point, the things that we've created open source-wise or software-wise are going to exist. And the people that have created it or even contributed to it might not anymore. Which is a very interesting thing, I think, because right now there's maintainers and there's groups of maintainers. And if those cease to exist, then, yeah, the software might cease to exist as well. But a lot of crucial components of businesses or organizations might rely on that open source software then.
That's true. We are more than the sum of the parts, right? Yeah. So because we are together. There's the emergence of these properties like software. So I don't know. There's no answer yet, but
yeah.
There is in open source there is a maintainer problem. I think we should make maintaining software more fun or sexy or something rewarded, right? So celebrate the people that maintain the software instead of.
I think it's admirable, for sure, but it's not really celebrated or something like that. I think it's a personal opinion. I don't think it's a general one.
Yeah, it's tricky. I think it's business should step in, right? So I personally donate to specific projects on GitHub through GitHub sponsors. I really just set like the monthly payment and that's and the project I believe in or the one that I want to help.
Yeah.
Business, they should put some budget. Maybe it's time for budgeting, open source contributions.
You're seeing that. Yeah. I mean, you're seeing that as well. I think if an organization does that, a community looks at them differently also.
Way different,
which could be like there's not really a financial incentive, there's more of a like giving back incentive, and organizations already do that, right? With artifacts like blogs or going to conferences, right? Sharing knowledge is one of the artifacts an organization can do to give back, and contributing to open source or giving a financial incentive in that way can be one as well.
Yeah, definitely. There is this rise of foundations now, right? So the Cloud Native Computing Foundation, and of course, they all started with the Linux Foundation, the Apache Foundation, and now there is a foundation for everything, the Green Ops, and the Green Software Foundation, and the FinOps Foundation.
Yeah.
But I see it as a positive trend, right? So there are people from the industry, players, end users, vendors, coming together to take care of software in a more democratic way. There's nothing to hate about it. I mean, it's actually, and the Cloud Native Computing Foundation, which I'm an humble ambassador, I pride myself of being part of the foundation, I mean, as a contributor, it's growing a lot. I mean, it grew from nothing.
It's going fast.
Yes, from there was no foundation 7 years ago.
Yeah.
And today is it's pretty large. I mean, KubeCon Amsterdam, 10,000 people, one of the largest conference in EMEA. So it's again, I don't know why, but it was great to be alive when I was, tinkering with the BBS.
Yeah.
And I feel still like it's the best time now that we are seeing this, right? So we are seeing this emergence of this cloud native software and so on, so much. So I don't know. I'm just lucky that every moment of my life has been great to be alive. Yeah. Right? So
that's the, I think that's the most healthy and best mindset, is the best time to be alive is right now.
Is right now, yes.
Yeah, so make use of it.
Yes, with AI and all sorts of technological advancement that it's mind-blowing, really, if you look what we were just a few years ago and what is today. Nobody can predict what is going to happen in the future. And I'm an optimist. I mean, I don't think AI will destroy humanity.
Yeah.
If properly handled, of course. Like, again, if you put profit first, then yes, it's not going to unlock the full potential of AI. But I think it's we can come together. Again, optimism, right? So
I think, I mean, the way you explain kind of being at the forefront of a lot of things in your childhood, I feel like AI and what we're seeing right now, I feel like we're at the forefront of a lot of things. And I hope that tens of years from now, 20 of years from now, I don't think that's the same. 20 years from now, we can talk back and say like, okay, this was really the starting point, and these are the things we saw. And this is kind of, this was kind of the trajectory. Yeah. Trajectory.
Have you read the book, The Better Angels of Our Nature, from Steven Pinker?
No.
So the world is getting better and better. I mean, I know that feels not.
Yeah.
Feels like this is going all, everything is going down. But this is the best time to be alive for a human.
Yeah.
If you have to choose a pick a historical either, you should
pick
this one.
Now is the future.
Yes. And so you can also learn from what happened when the internet was released, right? So when there was a good decade of amazing time, right? People were coming together, discussing things, lots of business built around. Now I think we are a bit going down. So there's dominance of this big social network, social networks, social media companies, which is probably kind of betraying the original idea behind connecting people, replacing it with just pure business interest, pure commercial interest. But I think that there's going to be a second wave of like a feel good and connecting people together, raising the conditions of humans all over the world.
Yeah,
that's the goal of technology in a way, right? So that's why we do this, right? So to improve lives everywhere.
I agree. Yeah, that should always be the goal. And if you notice that the goal is make as much money as possible, and if that's your environment, I think the people that are contributing to that software then are definitely going to feel the tail end of it, because there's going to be decisions where you're like, no, this is the best decision, right, for the people. And then the organization is going to be like, no, this is the best decision for us. Yeah. And then you're going to be like, okay, maybe this is not the environment for me.
Yes, but until we all come together. So I'm also, of course, like I love unions.
Mm.
I think we as engineers, we have a real power to change things, to influence things. So we can actually sit at the table of our companies and tell them. There's a thing called the Tech Worker Coalition.
Okay,
it's American, but it's also pretty active in Berlin, and there was a chapter. So it's a union of tech workers.
Okay,
it's, if you think about it, it's an amazing idea. So and they were famous. Famously, Google was gonna participate in some Department of Defense contract.
Okay,
and Google engineers, they told their managers, you can win the contract, but we're not gonna help you writing software for guided missiles or to kill people. That forced Google to actually withdraw from the competition, because so this is better than, there's always this myth, you can vote with your wallet.
Mm-hmm.
You can just don't buy Amazon, right?
Yeah, that's hard.
And there's so many people anyway buying from them.
Yeah,
but as a worker, as an engineer, somebody that you know can write AI code and software, you do have power.
Yeah,
you can say no, I'm not gonna write this. Yeah, I'm not gonna work on this. And techworkercoalition.org. It's I'm part of it, and it's pretty cool stuff.
I can imagine. Yeah.
I think,
on kind of my micro scale and my history, I've done that before where I'm like, I'm not building this, basically. Like it might be from an ethics standpoint, it might be from a principle standpoint where I disagree so much that I'm like, if you want this, someone else has to do it. And I've said that in that way. And that did make people realize or rethink kind of their ways. Like, huh, maybe we shouldn't do this in that way. And that kind of created a movement where we actually ended up doing something else instead. But if you don't take a stand like that, then things are never going to change. Yeah.
If people don't change, nothing changes.
Exactly.
It starts from us, right? Yeah. So and our work it's important, right? So we spend a lot of time at work. We can really make a difference. So again, like I'm an optimist. I think we can do it. So there's no reason not to.
Yeah. Good stuff, man. Yeah, so. I was thinking about kind of your history because you were a chemist, more so in education, then became sysadmin and eventually joined Microsoft. Yeah. Was that kind of more sysadmin stuff as well? Was that software engineering? What was that?
So I'll let you in a secret. I don't code.
Yeah.
I don't know any programming language. It's my thing.
Yeah.
But give me a Terraform code, give me some YAML. I feel very
good
comfortable.
To go.
Yeah. So yeah. I've always been a sysadmin. Like I build my own PCs, right? So it's and then I run Linux on it, and I have a closet full of computers and old computers and NUCs and NAS drives. I have my own cluster, Kubernetes cluster at home.
Yeah.
So I always been that side of the. There was this thing like that. Even in Microsoft at the beginning, there was like IT ops,
okay,
and devs, and
but kind of the split there.
Yeah, but that's of course with the old DevOps movement. It's about like breaking the barriers, and we're all trying to make a living and
create
try to work
cool.
together. Yeah,
yeah.
So that's and 10 years ago I started the DevOps meetup for this reason, because it resonated with me a lot. It's like why we have difference. You know, we are meant to work together.
Yeah.
Paraphrasing Marcus Aurelius, you know Stoicism.
No,
a bit.
Okay. I mean, it's on my list.
It's the. By the way, I'm a Stoic, so that's why I like to quote Marcus Aurelius. We are meant to work together like the upper and lower line of teeth. So IT and ops and dev, they are just meant to work together. So that's that resonated with me a lot. So it was early in my career, 10 years ago, more or less. So I started DevOps Meetup Amsterdam.
Yeah.
And it blew my mind. I mean, organizing meetups, it became one of my passion. And I still do.
Yeah, I saw that. What about it made it become like a passion? Like what did it do for you?
Yeah.
As kind of the organizer.
So I always thought, okay, I'm not great at programming. I mean, what can I do to contribute?
Yeah.
I can do this. I can get people together in a room. I can organize it, find speakers, find venues, and then order pizza, and then let people talk to each other.
Mm.
So that's my contribution.
Had you done that before?
No, I started 10 years ago. Yeah, with this thing. I had no clue
You're like,
what
I'll
to
do.
Do
it.
Yeah, I was in between jobs, and I said, I'm a bit bored.
Yeah.
I saw this meetup.com. It was very different. There were way less communities like this. And so I started DevOps Meetup. First meetup I remember there was ING. So everybody was really eager to
That's
learn.
Good.
And I always thought, okay, I'm doing this, right? So how do I know I'm doing it right?
Yeah.
The only way is like talk to people, confront myself. So I can, you know, I have some metric to know that I'm doing right. So that's my driving force. Like I want to know if this is the right way.
Yeah.
And I talk to people. So that's that made me kind of force me to be an extrovert.
Yeah.
Of course, I've always been an introvert, like most people, but that kind of made me. I forced myself to speak and to talk. So that was pretty pivotal moment in my career.
Yeah.
So that was cool.
That's awesome. What was like, I mean, you've organized a lot of meetups. What was like the biggest, like, proud moment that you've had while organizing meetups? Is it always like the attendees, the speakers, is the content, or what makes you really proud of like
organizing a meetup? So meetups are the best place to learn public speaking, right? So because it's very forgiving. It's it's okay if you make a mistake. Nobody's going to laugh at you, and they usually nobody laughs. But I help people coming to the meetup. I, you know, I encourage them, come to the meetup and do that. Try your talk there.
Yeah.
And it happened. So I saw many people starting at the meetup and then becoming, and then going on. And it kind of addictive in a way.
Snowballs.
Right? So yeah, then yeah. Can't stop. And now maybe some of them are speaking at KubeCon or they went on and have they are changed, right? So yeah. I helped them. I created the condition. I didn't help them a lot, but I created the condition so people can have a safe space to express themselves. And if they want to speak, they can do it.
Yeah.
And also the connection, right? So that's so at the meetups, we have one tonight, by the way, so at CBR office. So see, I keep doing it.
Yeah.
The talks are important. You are there to learn and to, of course, but the magic happens after the talk. When people stand up, have a drink, have a slice of pizza together, and they just engage, right? So it's I play the bass. I'm okay. A bass player.
Yeah.
Now the bass player is the guy that stays in the back.
Yeah.
You know, and then but without the bass, there is no music. You know, if it's not there, you will notice. But if it's there, you don't notice it. It's just there, right?
It's not in the forefront.
Yeah. So that's my role. I like to be the guy in the back, organizing, making it happen, but not being the front stage.
Yeah.
I do like public speaking, of course, but I like to organize things.
That's awesome, man.
Yeah. I get a thrill from, there's a good event, everybody's happy, everybody's smiling.
Yeah.
And that's my jam.
So that's a job well done.
Yeah.
Exactly. How do you... Because this is something I'm struggling with myself, is I meet a lot of people, but I don't put in the effort to kind of maintain those connections. Mm. And I have a feeling that you do, because a lot of people I've had on, yeah. William Rizzo is one of them, Bart Farrell, I mean, you recommended him to me, and he recommended you as well.
Thank you.
They all recommend you. They'll talk about it.
Hi, Bart.
It's like, William. Yeah, like you keep maintaining these connections, I feel like. How do you do that?
It's just... think about people, right? So when I think about somebody, I just send a message. It's hard. I know you think maybe they're busy. Yeah. Everybody's busy. So it's not, I'm busy. But it's like I do it with my friends as well. Check in.
Yeah.
You know, like, hey, how you doing? What are you working on? These kind of things. It's the little things.
Mm.
It's not like programming that you have a syntax and it's very clear what you have to do. With people, it's all messy.
Yeah.
So try to put them, listen to them, and try to put your at the same level with them. That's it. That's the best thing. You don't be humble. That's my approach. But yeah, it's all different. I have to say, like many of these people, like William, I didn't know him before. We organized KCD, Kubernetes Community Days, Amsterdam together, and kind of, you know, like you click.
Yeah.
That's it. So I can call him a friend now. It's we talked not every day, but we talk very often. So that's a good thing.
Good stuff. You don't have a system; they're just more top of mind, no?
Yeah, maybe it's Italians. it's in general like I send random messages to people that I want to know more about. Right.
Yeah.
So LinkedIn is a. I don't do TikTok. I don't do much Facebook. LinkedIn is my social network.
I think it's the best one to do that type of stuff.
It's maybe because I'm old.
No. I like LinkedIn probably the most as well. Yeah. I feel like the other ones are more so sending, and I feel like LinkedIn has a bigger kind of career interactive component to it.
Yeah, I'm not a Twitter guy. I mean, I use it today. I posted. I got some. Yeah, but. On Twitter, you get this. On many social media, you get this dopamine rush. Like, I got all these likes.
Yeah.
So in a way, you change your message to get more likes.
Yeah. Trying to play in the system.
Yeah, but it's a trap, right? So it's then you make something just because you want to have this approval, right? So and that's not my thing.
Yeah.
I'm okay. LinkedIn is different. You just share what you do. It's more of a forum, I think. And it's more about, and the personal messages are really most important.
Personal.
I use it more than email.
Okay.
More than WhatsApp, of course. It's my thing.
Good stuff. That's really cool, man. I like that.
Yeah,
I think I should do more of that.
You have to build your persona. So you have to build your persona, right? So who you are, what you do, and how you want people to see you, right?
Yeah.
So and then you put it out there.
But is your persona the same you? It should be, no? Otherwise, it's hard.
Yes. Most of it, of course. I post on LinkedIn that I'm a DJ, so we organize parties. By the way, I have this second life.
Second life?
It's not a second life. It's the life, right? Yeah. So me and my friends, we organize sometimes illegal raves in Amsterdam, this kind of thing. I don't mind sharing it. You know, there's nothing to be ashamed of.
Yeah.
Maybe with age it comes I don't care what you think of me. This is what I am. It's if you don't like it.
Yeah, you don't like it. Yeah.
But it comes with age. Mm. It comes with the territory, you know, the older you get, the less you care about what people think. But you do want to be one person, right? So not having multiple faces, multiple personality. No, it's I dress better. I dress like this because I dress like this at home, right?
So, I like it.
So it's I try to be more of myself everywhere, and it's getting there. So.
I think that's the best way to do it. Otherwise, it's just going to be exhausting. And some of the feedback I got on this show as well, that I am myself on the show and off the show. And I really like that feedback. In the moment I was like, yes, that is true. And in the beginning it was different. Maybe because I was the podcast was more new, was more fresh. Maybe I didn't know how to be myself. I didn't really think about it. But now it's just, it's the same. Hopefully. Yeah. Hopefully you'll notice it as well.
Yeah. I mean, you don't need to impress anyone.
Yeah.
Only yourself.
Right.
I mean, it's a recipe for disaster and unhappiness when you look at other podcasts and
trying to be someone else.
It's your success.
Yeah.
You know, you measure, you define it, and you achieve it if you believe in yourself. That's it. So that's in this job, in this industry, I mean, there's so many people more successful than you.
Mm-hmm.
There's this
always.
This imposter syndrome is everywhere. Just live with it.
Yeah.
So yes, of course, there's more people successful, apparently more successful according to their own metrics. They are doing great, but are you doing great according to your own
measurements?
That's I try to live by this rule, right? So only I define my own success, and I want to achieve it.
Yeah,
so.
I think that's healthier.
Yeah,
and there's a lot of stuff. I mean, especially with social media now, that might seem like you're not successful. But who defines it, right? It's your own measurement, and you can change your own. You can change your own measurements, right? If you're happy with what you're doing, then why does it matter what everyone else is doing? If you're happy with what you're doing, you should be happy as well.
Yeah. Again, stoicism. So I'm big on stoicism. It kind of guides my life. It's a personal philosophy, mm-hmm. right? So everything is in your mind. How you react to events.
Yeah.
It's up to you. Things can happen to you. This is like a background, right? So it's something that happens to you. The car breaks down, or you get fired, or you win money.
Yeah.
All these are events, and the only thing that you can influence is how you react to this external stimuli. And that's it. This is the core of stoicism, is that you are in control of your own thoughts. And having good thoughts makes a good life.
Yeah.
So it's again Marcus Aurelius, not me, of course.
Good stuff. I've heard that before, and I've even said that before because I agree with it, but I didn't know it came from Stoicism.
Of course,
it originated from there.
Yeah, Marcus Aurelius. He was fighting a war with the German tribes, and he lost children to illness.
Mm.
So he was the emperor.
Yeah,
a lot of pressure. And he took the time to sit down every morning, write his own memories, and to appreciate what he got, right? So the good things that happened in his life, no? So be grateful, appreciate what you have. It's a great life lesson. It comes from 2,000 years ago, from a Roman emperor, right? So and before him, like a Seneca and other philosopher from Greece. I think everybody should have his own personal philosophy. Right?
Yeah.
So think about life and think about what to do with your life and how do you want to go through life. And I found my own in there, but everybody's free to find your own philosophy.
Yeah. Yeah, I like that. I might give that a read, or hopefully there's a good audiobook because I like audiobooks more than
yes,
reading.
Yes, no, I'll give you my copy of
good stuff.
Meditations from Marcus Aurelius.
That's awesome. Yeah. I was wondering, because I saw on your LinkedIn profile that, I mean, first of all, you've done a whole lot, but now you have a DevRel role.
Yes.
And the
yes.
DevRel role to me is very interesting also because it's, I mean, I've applied to a DevRel role
mm-hmm.
and I didn't in the end want to do it because, first of all, I'm inexperienced and it was a small team. So I would have only the role and it would have been too much unknown, I feel like, at the time.
Mm-hmm.
And second, I didn't really love the product. But the DevRel role is like kind of how you fit in with the organization and really depends on the context and what you're trying to do product-wise, what the business mm-hmm. goals are in that way. Which is really weird because it's not a role that I would have seen probably 10 years ago, but it's definitely a role that's more up and coming now.
Is rising.
Yeah.
There's even a DevRel con.
I saw that.
Yes.
Yeah.
There's one. There was one in Japan. I'm going to speak in London in September. It's for some reason, of course, companies are realizing that DevRel is a good investment, right? So they are hiring lots of people to do this. Right?
Yeah.
So there's it's technical marketing, but there is something more to it, right?
Yeah.
So it's
not just that.
No, it's it's an act of love.
Yeah.
So you have to love developers so much that you want to, you know, help them succeed in through your product, of course, if it can happen.
Yeah.
But it's very difficult, not difficult. I mean, you need to have some qualities, right? So first of all, be nice.
Yeah,
right? That's the first thing.
That's
that helps.
Should be an easy one.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Should be easy one. But you really want to help other people, right? So it's amazing role. I quit my job at Microsoft because I wanted to be a DevRel.
Awesome.
That's the whole I thought I'm too young to settle.
Yeah.
I mean, I need to pursue my passion, and I like to do this public speaking and help people. So that's why I joined Solo. To be a DevRel. We call it platform advocate now because we do more about platforms, but
yeah
that's the core is talking about technology. And if you are passionate, you're already on a good track. And I'm also learning, you know, it's a role that you have to define for yourself.
Right? Yeah.
Some people like to blog more, some people are the Twitter crowd, you know, but you have to find your way.
I feel like DevRel as well. Yeah.
Which is great, right? So
yeah. It has pros and cons, right? No one's gonna tell you what to do, but no one's gonna tell you what to do. So there's opportunities and there might be either risks or unknowns, and you have to figure that out yourself, right?
Yeah.
It's whatever you create out of it, which sounds really cool.
I think you should give it
I don't know when. This is always how I describe it, right? I feel like I'm still at the forefront of a lot of things. If you would ask me 2 years ago, because I was more so new within software engineering, I mean, probably 3 or 4 years ago nowadays, I was really interested in the kind of the Scrum Master role, facilitating and making sure the process runs smooth, because probably, again, because of that team player aspect, right?
The base player.
Right.
Of the team,
maybe the base player, yeah. Or I was really interested in kind of the product owner role, right? Mm-hmm. Defining where the value is, going there as fast as possible, and being in control of kind of the priorities and the business goals there, and facilitating that with developers and development in that way. That was really my interest at the time, 3-4 years ago. And nowadays, more so a year ago, I think maybe even 2, it started was, I like working a lot with people, right? So I like personal development. I like goal setting as well. I like seeing other people achieve their goals with or without my help, but with my help especially, right? Giving advice, giving feedback in that way, that really apparently is of value of people. It gives me fulfillment when I see that. So then I'm thinking about, okay, more so a team lead role, more so an engineering manager path in that way. But I've also done this podcast. I love public speaking in that way.
Yeah,
content creation, that is more so the DevRel role.
Yeah. Storytelling.
Yeah.
I think you got this, right? So
I hope so. Yeah. My girlfriend says I'm awful at it because she sees then kind of the artifacts of this, and she sees me try at home, and I'm like, I'm trying to improve. That's what.
Yeah, that's storytelling is everything. Like that.
Yeah.
People you help people when you connect with them, right? So that's what we tell our kids.
Yeah.
Connection before correction.
Okay.
Right? So connection is everything. It's what makes us humans, right? So, and we connect by exchanging stories. This is how we evolve to tell each other stories, and that's where culture comes in, right?
Yeah.
So we create culture by telling stories. And if you can tell story and people can connect to you, you don't put yourself in the, you know, it's not your story. It's like how they, the other people connect to your story that matters.
Yeah.
It's not like, ah, this is how I do it and you should just do this. No, it's making them feel that you are helping them.
Yeah.
Because they can see their own struggles in your struggle. Right? That's why we always choose when we do meetups or Kubernetes community days, we love to hear stories from the trenches.
Mm.
Hey, this is what I did. I made some mistakes. I'm telling you so you don't do the same mistakes.
Yeah.
It's amazing, right? So it's an act of love for people because you are sharing your story and helping them.
Yeah.
It's if you see this in this light, like a connection and love, it's the best job in the world.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
That's why it's really hard to me because it's because my interests vary mm-hmm. and I feel like there's always a people component nowadays. Yet like you, I would describe myself an introvert, right?
Mm-hmm.
If I have one of these conversations, I can do a second one. After that, I'm exhausted. When I go to a meetup or even a conference, I'm exhausted afterwards, right? Because of all the social interactions in that way. So then I'm like, should I do it? But maybe I really like doing it, so I should.
Yeah, you got this social budget,
yeah.
Right? So yes, maybe now two conversations, you are too tired.
Yeah.
But by doing it more often, then you can have three or four, and then
did you feel like it increased?
Yeah, yeah,
really?
Of course, I like to cut time for myself. When I go to a conference, I always take an afternoon for myself. I don't want to talk to anyone. Yeah. Just listen to music. Usually, I explore the city I'm in. Mm. It's the best thing ever.
That's awesome.
But on the other hand, it's actually nice to talk to people. These are real people. So this job, of course, code, create, open source. Awesome. It's about the people.
Mm.
The real core of this job, the job we do, is people.
Yeah.
And in the end, like, you have to convince somebody to depart from their money and give it to you for some value in exchange.
Yeah.
And how you do it, you just tell a story about yourself, about what you do. So it's one secret weapon we have, right?
Mm-hmm.
So if we get better storytelling, the world is your oyster. You unlock the potential of yourself. So
yeah, when would you say you got really good at storytelling, or do you even consider yourself really good?
No, of course I'm.
You're always learning.
I'm a Padawan. Not a Jedi yet, but by public speaking at the first meetups I organized, right?
Yeah.
Because I was organized, so I have to get on stage. And do my thing, right?
Yeah.
So tell everybody some stories, and that's how I get there. And yeah. I like it actually.
It suits you, I feel like.
Yeah, of course. Don't worry. It's always good. At least for me. I don't know if other people. I don't know anybody that actually does that. But it's always very. It makes you very anxious. Like I don't sleep the night before.
That.
Yeah, it's okay. Yeah. Just embrace it.
Yeah.
You know, just because you know it's gonna be good in the end. So just go for it. Sometimes I just jump into it. It's better best strategy, best tactic. Yeah.
Does it still make you anxious? Like after all this time?
Yeah.
Yes,
of course.
Yeah, it never goes away, does it?
No. It's part of you.
Yeah.
It's.
I feel like that makes you really want this.
Yeah,
I really want to make it in a good way.
Yeah, when I do public speaking, I read books about it. So my philosophy is this. So first of all, you owe people in the audience some time. So they're all there for you. So
they invested.
You are now responsible for 30 minutes of their time. Now multiply that for 300 people. It's a lot of hours.
Yeah.
Right? So treat it with respect. Be prepared. Tell a story. I mean, don't just improvise. So that's the first thing. Give them something that they can take home. No, don't talk about yourself. Try to connect with them. It's how I feel it. Right. So you owe these people some good information, good story, good talk.
Yeah.
And that's it's a responsibility, but it's a good one, right? So it makes. Makes me want to do more.
Yeah.
So it's a thing.
I really love that perspective.
Yeah.
And I think it's true.
Yeah.
And I think you also notice it in the audience. If a speaker or if a presenter doesn't take it as seriously, you're like, this is kind of a waste of my time.
It's literally they are there for you. So first, also don't get scared because they are there for you.
Yeah.
You know, you are
it's
on stage.
It's also a good thing.
Right? So it's no one else is there.
Yeah.
So don't accept to be put down by anyone.
Yeah.
Because you're there, so you deserve it. So now really deserve it. do your part.
Yeah.
Right? So
which do justice.
Yeah, get prepared and make a nice story. Yes.
Good stuff, man.
Yeah.
Cool. This was a lot of fun, I must say. I'm going to enjoy listening back to
maybe
this.
One day we'll be colleagues.
Maybe one day.
On stage.
See, man. I think the world is, especially the tech world, is smaller than I thought initially.
Oh, yeah,
and,
sure.
And having done this podcast for as long as we have now, I've met a lot of people, and I think the world is even smaller. So I think it's really cool to be able to build those connections up.
Yeah.
And probably must be the same for you with regards to the meetups.
Smaller but bigger because we have more diversity of opinions.
Yeah.
I love your show because it's people don't talk about tech, right? So it's beyond tech, right?
Yeah.
So
thanks,
beyond
man.
Cody. Yeah, so that's that's why I really wanted to be here. Right? So.
I'm really happy to have had you. Is there anything you still want to share before we round off?
No. So, well, we have the largest... one big meetup, so we have 3,000 people. We work on this meetup for 7 years. So the Dutch Kubernetes meetup, it's our home. So I encourage people to, if they want to get involved, I mean, community is it's an open space, right?
Yeah.
So I have people coming, telling me on LinkedIn, of course, I want to do something. I said, just come, organize something. It's an open door. Everybody's welcome. So
yeah,
we would like to have more people. Actually, I'm a bit tired, but yeah. If somebody else wants to step in, be extreme. It's a team, right? So we also. I want to thank Andy, William, Marcel, and everybody else. Pablo, and I'm sorry, I'm forgetting somebody. My own wife, of course, Meg.
Yeah.
Also, she helps with the meetup and with the Kubernetes Community Day. So it's never a solo sport.
I like
it's
that.
A team sport.
Team
yeah,
effort.
Like.
Good stuff.
Could not have achieved what I have without the help of a lot of friends and colleagues and people along the way. So.
Yeah, that's awesome, man. Yeah. Cool. We're going to round it off here then. I'm going to put all Alessandro's socials in the description below, as well as some links to some meetups here and there. Check it out. Let them know you came from our show. And with that being said, thank you for listening. We'll see you in the next one.